All right. This is Forrest Elise interviewing Niccolo Haller for the Creative Push Project on September 13th at 3:17. All right. So maybe take us, set us up. Where were you? Were you in Germany?
I was right here in Phoenix. Mm-hmm.
And talk about the conception. Was it planned? Was it a hot summer?
There's music playing. And well, I think the conception probably happened, I'm pretty sure it happened in San Francisco when I was coming back from a month in Europe visiting my family. And I met my guy in San Francisco because my plane was going through there. And so I thought that would be a great time to take a vacation. And I had always wanted a child, and we actually had sort of a scare, like a pregnancy scare, very early on in our relationship, but during which he proved himself, you know, by immediately being willing to step up to the plate. That turned out not even to be a pregnancy. So, you know, I kind of knew that he would be okay with everything, but we weren't trying to have a baby at the time. It just sort of happened. And then when I found out, we were actually both in the bathroom, you know, doing the test. And we were both like ridiculously excited. It was at his grandparents' house up in northern Arizona. And so we're both super excited about it, super happy about it the entire time. Pregnancy was actually pretty easy. I lucked out, you know. I think I was maybe sick just a little bit for 2 weeks, but it wasn't, you know, I had a good friend that was sick for like a whole year and she couldn't keep anything down, and I didn't have any of that. It was kind of like the perfect pregnancy in a way. But birth was not as, you know, as I planned.
Can you do me a favor, though, and elaborate a little bit more on the pregnancy? Did you, were you, did you put on a lot of weight? What was your, were you still working? Like, what was, how were you emotionally too?
Yeah.
Physically?
Yeah. I got a job. Cause you know, when I had gone to Europe, I had quit my job, which was a very high pressure management job. I came back, didn't know I was pregnant yet. Got a new job at like just, at a resale clothing store, and which was kind of hip, and that was really I had a lot of fun, you know, worked with a lot of really great people, found out I was pregnant, and was working I can't remember, I think I was working close to full time the whole time. And I did gain a ton of weight when I was pregnant. It actually ended up looking like as if I was carrying twins, because I gained, I think it was mostly water weight, you know, and but you know, blood pressure went up a little bit, but nothing out of the ordinary. Like all the health checks came back normal, and emotionally I was just super happy to be pregnant, to be expecting a child, felt really connected to, you know, Max as he was in my womb. And I felt, yeah, everything was really great, and felt a little bit more sensitive, but it wasn't an emotional roller coaster really. I think the last month was really tough. Last couple months, it kind of started changing a little bit as it got closer to birth. I started getting pretty nervous, just about the idea of, you know, pushing out this bowling ball, you know, I mean, just when you visualizing, you know, pushing something that big out of your body, you know, it's just unfathomable. And then you, of course, you know, you read all the stories, the good and the bad, and there's a lot of like kind of shoulds and shouldn'ts that you have to think about, you know, do I want to take medication? Do I want this to be natural? You know, how is this going to work? Is there going to be an emergency? You know, am I going to live through it And so a lot of anxiety came up at the end, and Max was, or I don't know if I should say his name. Yeah, okay. Max was, by my calculations, overdue. But in retrospect, I think I miscalculated when I actually got pregnant, because according to the ultrasound, he still had like a whole month. So I thought he was like 3 weeks overdue, and they were monitoring me like the last 3 weeks. I had to go in to the birthing center every day to get monitored and make sure that fetus was healthy and placenta was still, you know, like viable and all that stuff. But when he, you know, finally came out, he actually he didn't show any signs of being in there too long. And so I think that I may have been wrong, and just me being a control freak kind of, you know, I should have just trusted the ultrasound. I should have trusted the doctor, but I always felt like, I know it was full moon and, you know,
so he wasn't premature though either. He was like, exactly what they were
doing. I think that maybe he arrived a couple of days before he should have, you know. But I don't think he was ready to come out. And that was the key thing, because I thought he was 3 weeks overdue. And so they kind of were like, well, yeah, okay, we'll go with that. And they were monitoring me. And then finally they were like, well, since there is a possibility that he's been in there so long, we need to induce you. So initially I had, like, I was going to a birthing center. I had a natural birthing plan in mind. And, you know, had a midwife that I really, really loved and that was awesome. And, you know, we thought we were going to do this whole thing naturally, like water birth in the birthing center and everything. And then, you know, but then the 3 weeks, they started monitoring and everything. And they were like, well, I think it would be safer if we induced you and you went and had this baby in the hospital, which was just down the road, just in case he was really overdue and there was going to be a problem. And so I was like, okay, you know, let's do that. I feel safer with that too. And so they induced, and inducing makes labor much, much harder. You know, like the first one that they, I can't remember what it's called. Like the first one they put, you know, in your vagina, it's like that little,
is it a Foley ball? Is it a ball that inflates, or is it like a pill?
It's like a what do you call that? I know the word in German. It's like medication. It's Zäpfchen. They put up, you know, it's like a little
suppository?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they put like medication into you per suppository that's supposed to, you know, has like that hormone. It's not Pitocin, but it's like somewhat similar that is supposed to kind of slowly activate labor. That didn't work, you know, 12 hours, nothing. And, but that 12 hours, I was already in the hospital. So nothing for 12 hours, and I was in there. And then they started the Pitocin through drip. And that was pretty crazy because it monitors how strong your contractions are and how often your contractions are. So you don't have like sort of a natural progression that your body would normally have. And I wasn't even dilated yet. So we were like, I don't remember how long this whole thing even happened, but they were like, no, I didn't want an epidural and I didn't want drugs. But then you know, by that time I had been like, I think by the time I was like 8 centimeters dilated, which took forever. Like, I don't know if it was like maybe 24 hours already. I mean, it was like a long time. Of pain and contractions and everything. And I was like super exhausted, no sleep. And finally I was just like, give me the drugs. and then they like gave me first, because they were like, you know what? We don't know. You're not dilated enough for the epidural yet. So we're going to give you this other drug. And it was, you know, some kind of downer, something that makes you get all loopy and out of it. So I took that and I don't remember what it was, but I actually got some sleep, which was nice, you know, but then it caused Max to go into distress. It caused his heart rate to slow, you know, because it was like a downer drug. And then finally at 8 centimeters, it was like nothing was working, and I was like, I can't handle the pain anymore. I'm too exhausted. So I was like, give me the damn epidural. Give it to me, you know? And they were like, well, it's kind of on borderline being too late. And I was like, I don't care. Give it to me, you know?
So it was too soon.
Yeah.
And then it was almost too late.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, you guys got to be kidding me. And my midwife also wasn't there because she had taken a vacation. You know, because Max was officially 3 weeks late and she had already made plans for a vacation because she thought that Max would already be there, you know. And so she wasn't there. And the doctor that was going to be delivering, he was part of that birthing center. He was kind of like the doctor that oversees everything. And I liked him a lot, but he wasn't my first choice. And he wasn't even there yet, you know. So it was just a nurse from the hospital and whichever other doctors were there. And so I finally got the epidural, and it was kind of funny, you know, because they make you like ball up really tight into a ball and you can't move. And I'm like, and I didn't really feel it go in or anything because they put a numbing agent on you first. But the father, who is now my ex, he was holding me tight. And finally I just heard the nurse say, sir, I need you to go over here and sit down, because I guess he was green in the face when he saw the needle, like he almost passed out and he wasn't going to be able to hold me because it was so huge. And so I thought that was kind of, you know, funny. And then I got the epidural and, you know, that kind of helped. I think I got some more sleep. And then finally it was like it was fully starting and it was time to push. And then I think it was like 3.5 hours of pushing, which was just insane, you know. And I kept remembering, like, thinking, you know, when it was just like really, really bad during the pushing, I remember just saying to the nurse, you know, it was totally just delirious. And I remember saying to the nurse, can I just go home and do this later, you know? Because in my life, I've always had the option, you know, like probably most people, you always kind of have an option to kind of like, and quit this job, or I can just stay home from school today, or I can kind of slack on this. And so in my mind, I just thought irrationally that I could get out of this somehow and just revisit it later. And for the first time in my life, there was like this just clarity that came that was like, your body doesn't care what you think. Like, you are on this ride and you're not getting off until it's done. And you have no choice in the matter. Your body is just doing this, you know? And I can honestly say, like, in my life, that was a pivotal moment. And even though it was horrible, you know, in retrospect, it was the greatest experience of my life, coming to that realization. Because ever since then, I think it actually prepared me for having a child, having that moment. Because there's so many times I could have bailed. There's so many times that, you know, like I think birth is really hard and it's like probably the rawest thing you can ever do in life. But I don't think it even compares to like what motherhood is and the sacrifices that you make and willingly. So maybe it's like, I don't know, if you look at it from like a spiritual way or something, maybe it's like nature's way of like preparing yourself for a really tough job, you know? And so anyway, so kind of like digressing back to that moment, you know, and then shortly after that, they were talking about, okay, we need to maybe use forceps now, because he just wasn't coming out properly. And at some point they realized that the cord was wrapped around around his arm. And so that's why he was failing, you know, like his blood pressure was down. They were worried. It was kind of too late for them to go in and open me up. And so they were like, okay, we needed to use forceps maybe. And I was like, hell no, you know, I am pushing this sucker out. And then the doctor actually finally arrived and helped me. Like, he pushed down on my belly while I was pushing to help push him out. And all of a sudden he was out, you know, and then it was really tough, because, you know, Max came out and he wasn't breathing and he was blue, and they had to, I mean, I just, you know, I was over here and they were over on the far side of the room, and I kept kind of like looking over and what the hell's going on. And I just saw him like smacking him like on the front, turning him over, smacking him on the back, and just kept like suctioning him, smacking him, you know, to try and get him to, because I guess he'd swallowed a lot of that meconium stuff, and they were just trying to clear his lungs and get him to breathe, and, you know, and he almost died. So, it was really tough, really tough. But, you know, he made it through, and they got him to, you know, they got him to breathe, and then they were just going to like whisk him away into the oxygen tank, you know, because they had to run all the tests on him and just make sure that he was okay, that his lungs were okay and stuff. But I was able to persuade him to let me hold him for like a second, you know, and so I got to hold him, and that was really strange, actually. I don't know, like, if you had that experience with August, but looking into his eyes, you know how infants' eyes are like totally black? It's like as if the universe is still, like as if they're not here yet. Like it felt like as if he was still like as if he was like an alien and he had just arrived here and he wasn't even totally there yet. Like it was a really strange thing. And for a second I was like, is it wrong for me to think this? You know? And so it was like really amazing, but it was also really surreal. Like there's this being, you know? So, anyway, it was super emotional and really bizarre. And then they whisked him off, and then, you know, and then I had to go through like, and, you know, the afterbirth, and they had to like stitch me up and stuff a little bit. Not too much, luckily, but, you know, I did the afterbirth thing, and then I started running a fever, and one of my veins in my leg got like inflamed, and so I ended up having to, like, I couldn't see him right away. Like, they had to make sure that I was okay first, and they had to give me like blood thinners and stuff like that just to make sure that there wasn't like a clot, you know, in my leg. I think all the pressure from the pushing just, you know, did something with my veins. And so, you know, Max was like over there fighting and I was over here fighting, and it was just super emotional and super traumatic, because all I wanted to do is just be with him, and I couldn't, and I knew that he was probably totally like, where am I? What the hell's going on? Why can't I hear my mom's voice? You know? And so finally later that, like, I gave birth 7 a.m. or 7:10 a.m. And then finally by about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they let me see him. So it was like, felt like an eternity, you know? And then it was pretty amazing. Like, I went into that nursery where they have all the oxygen tanks and stuff for the preemies and, you know, everybody. And Max was just in his little tank, just screaming like up a fury. Like, his face was bright red and he was so angry. I mean, it was just a fury, you know? And they'd been trying to talk him down, and his dad went over there and started talking to him and everything. And he was just, he didn't care. He was like, he was pissed. And then I went over there and I just started talking to him, and he immediately stopped crying. And that was just amazing, you know? That was just amazing. Because you think, you know, like, you know that they hear you in there and that they're connected to you in there in the womb for all those months. But just to have that, like, confirmation that that was really real, that he felt that too, that it wasn't just me, you know? it just felt like such a solid bond, you know. And yeah, and then, you know, he ended up making it through, and I think he was in there for like a couple of days, and they were still keeping an eye on me for a couple of days. So I think all in all, I think we were in the hospital for like 48 hours after birth or something. And I think that's pretty much it.
So when you were going through the labor process, yeah, and there was all that drama with, you know, him coming out and not knowing what's going on. And,
right.
What was the father thinking? He must have been just in a strange headspace, because you were, you know, having issues after the birth, and uh-huh, the baby was having issues after the birth. Did he talk to you about that, or was he helpful, or was he just feeling powerless?
Claude was super helpful. Like, his personality, he's always been like, he doesn't really talk about stuff, which ultimately kind of led to the demise of the relationship, unfortunately. But he's like the stoic kind. Like, when the going gets rough, he's just, you know, there. He's quiet and he's strong. And, you know, but that was great, you know, in those kind of situations, it's great. So he ended up going with Max, because I obviously like was worried too that they would like switch him in the room or something. You know, I just wanted to make sure that he was gonna be okay, you know. And so yeah, he did well, but I to this day I don't really completely know like how he felt, because he doesn't really talk about his own feelings that much. But, you know, he was there, he was present, and he was strong. And, I mean, he was, like, super duper excited and in love with Max right away, you know? And that was really cool.
I can't believe you went to 8 centimeters on Pitocin. Because Pitocin is so intense.
Dude. Yeah, I don't know what to compare it to.
Well, I think that you're right in saying, because I made 4 and I was like,
right, yeah.
But they say the one of the things is that natural like build, you know, like mother was saying, she was cooking and doing stuff. Like, it's like, you, and then you also have this excitement and anticipation that builds,
right,
like, with the body, you know, with right, the surges. So you're kind of more emotionally prepared for pain.
Yeah.
Because your excitement level is really high. Right. Because you've been getting all this like oxytocin and hormones.
Right.
And when you're getting that Pitocin, it's like from 0
to 100. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think what happened is with the dilation, I think it was like I wasn't dilated enough. And then I think it went from like 3 or whatever the, you know, there's a certain rate that they don't want to give you the epidural yet because it's too early. And I went from that to 8 in like, I think it was only 15 or 20 minutes. Like, it was like really fast. Like, it took a really long time. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, let's go. And I think so it kind of took everybody by surprise, you know?
So were you, had you had a family history? Did you have a family support network, or did you have a certain expectation of what your birth process was going to be?
Well, I thought that, you know, I thought it was going to be natural at a birthing center, you know, and so it was completely the opposite. But I don't know, and I wrestled with that, I think, you know, later. At the time, I didn't really wrestle with it too much because I just wanted to do what was necessary. But later on, I wrestled with it because it wasn't, you know, because I think, like, as a mother, there's that pressure, you know, to make it look good. You know, like, the ideal mother has a natural birth and breastfeeds for, you know, at least a year. And there's all these, you know, pressures now to be, like, this perfect mother. And I think kind of letting go a lot of that stuff, because Max also didn't end up latching on very well because they ignored my instructions and gave him a bottle and a binky before he was able to breastfeed for the first time. And so that kind of, and then we even went to see like a lactation specialist and all that stuff later to try and fix it. But it just, our stress level, you know, and after the birth that we had had, our stress level was probably pretty high anyway, like post-traumatic or whatever. And our stress level just kept rising because of him not being able to get the food that he needed because he wasn't latching on right, and me being in pain. That finally I just decided, no, it's not worth it. I'm just gonna, you know, I'd rather we bond and, you know, really get the opportunity to bond and relax and recover from this experience rather than just, well, no, you must breastfeed at all costs, you know. And I'm still, to this day, I'm happy with the decision that I made for that, you know. But I did beat myself up about it for a really long time. But I was like, okay, I choose sanity, you know, because it really got to that point. I think it was at one point where Max and I were both, like, he was screaming at the top of his lungs. We were sitting in the car, like we were on an errand or something, and I was trying to breastfeed him in the back of the car. And he was screaming because he couldn't get milk. And I was, like, crying and getting angry because, like, you know, my breasts were hurting. And because he was freaking out and, you know, it was just impossible. I was like, no, screw it. I'm not doing this, you know? And I think it was good, but there, yeah.
I think that's a good way of putting it because, like, a lot of times people that have very good breastfeeding experience, like my mother talks about uh-huh. how it is this bonding thing between mother and child. But there's also the flip side of that, how yeah. it actually prevents bonding if it's not going well, you know? It's like,
right.
inhibits it, I think, because all this frustration and emotional turmoil is not letting right. you just enjoy being with your child.
Right, yeah. Yeah, so, I don't know. I think the whole experience overall was like an exercise in letting go of, you know, previously held conceptions, and just kind of surviving and just making it through, you know. And, you know, I don't know if other people that have, like, more, you know, traumatic kind of births that experience it this way. But, you know, and I don't know if maybe it's, you know, because I am, like, by nature somebody that likes to sort of control things. Or maybe we all as human beings try to control things, you know. Because in my everyday life, I'm not really somebody that's constantly trying to control things. I'm kind of the opposite way. I'm maybe a little bit more too laid back about stuff. But when it comes to, like, that, the big pain and things like that, I really thought that if I can manage this experience, that it'll be less painful for me. And I think it was kind of a big surprise for me that you don't have any control over this. And it was weird for me. I think one of the hardest things for me was honestly seeing my, like the Max's dad, see me at such a, like, a raw, vulnerable, gosh. It's like another person seeing me completely without anything in between, like with no pretenses. Like, I've always thought that I was somebody that can be really emotionally open, and I'm a good communicator, and, you know, like, oh, yeah, I can be so vulnerable in a relationship. And it really taught me that, no, I'm not really, you know, like, if somebody, like, I felt after birth, I felt like he saw too much. It was weird. Like, it felt kind of strange. Not physically so much, but, well, I also kind of felt like, yeah, maybe he shouldn't have been in the room. Like, maybe in the 50s and 60s, maybe they had it right, you know? Like, you just kind of, you know, you have your child and you go through this messy experience, and but the father of your child doesn't really know, you know, just, you know, that you were just, like, kind of temporarily insane and, you know, your guts were hanging out and, you know, it just felt so raw. Like, maybe I could handle my mom seeing that, but I don't know, you know, anybody else for that matter, not somebody that I, because I've never seen that side of him. So it's like kind of a weird balance even. Like, you've seen everything there is to see about who I am, but I've never seen who you are. I don't know.
I think that's very poignant, Do, because you're right. You just by the nature of that experience and who has it, which is the female, you know, unless that changes. That you just, you're exposed in a different way.
Yeah.
I also think that idea of pretenses is interesting too, because it's like, you know, we were just talking about labels, you know, and uh-huh. It's like, you know, it, regardless of how punk or how cool you are or anything,
right?
Labor, you're not a punk, you're not
right.
goth, you're not, you know, a hipster, you are a woman giving birth, and that is just transcends all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you have kind of some similar thoughts about those things? Yeah, I've never really talked too much about other women, and that's why this project's actually going to be interesting to, you know, read about and see, because everybody's experiences are so different.
They are, but then some of the things that are similar are surprising, you know, which has been really interesting. Like, we hear women talking about body image. And and then this, of course, the situation of control, lack of control, because we're kind of taught that we can control this. You can't, really.
Yeah.
You know, and how you can have a bad experience, but if you go in it with the right mindset, it can, like, makes it a good experience in a way.
Right, right.
But if you go in there with this expectation of having a particular experience and you end up getting something very different, sometimes that's really traumatic.
Yeah, yeah, so I think so too, yeah. It's like how you reframe it in your mind, right? Yeah.
And it's been interesting too because we have found similarities, and then but we really have had a lot of differences because each person is such a unique way of interpreting their experience.
Right.
This isn't just like a journalistic kind of catalog of, and this happened, and then at 3 hours later I did this. And then, you know what I mean? Because it's like a personal interpretation of it.
Yeah.
So in that way, they've been very unique.
Yeah. I think maybe, I don't know, it's just me being, you know, waxing philosophical about this, but maybe it also shows, you know, how comfortable you feel with yourself and how much you love yourself, you know, as a human being, just at that very core experience, you know, like you said, you know, we can be, you know, punk rock, we can be a hippie, we can be into this, we can be into that, but when you're in a situation like birth, our own birth, actually, you know, when we're born, or the birth of our children, or death, all those things are completely stripped away. I think those are the only three times in your life that, you know, any of the outside stuff, any of the images are completely stripped away and you're absolutely naked. So, yeah, maybe it kind of boils down to, you know, how much do you really love yourself? I don't know, you know? But I think it's taught me a lot about myself, you know? And I overall, like, even though it was like, you know, a stressful experience, I don't know, maybe birth is always stressful, you know, unless you're, you know, lucky enough to have a really relaxed, like, home birth kind of a thing. But, you know, overall, it's like, it's a traumatic process for your body to go through. I mean, people die in childbirth. It's pretty raw. And so, in a way, it's life-changing, you know, and I don't know, it feels good to talk about it, actually. Because usually you kind of shove it away into the back of your mind and you just kind of carry on.
Yeah, I found that I really needed to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that anyone really wanted to hear about it because it would be like, oh, you know, oh, do you have a C-section? Oh, do you have natural? How many pounds was he? And then
right.
the conversation ends, you know?
Right.
But not a lot of this kind of where you really are giving meaning to your experience, you know, where your experience is meaningful other than just bringing life into the world. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's meaningful. It was meaningful to me other than just, not to say just, but other than bringing my son into the world.
Right.
It meant more than that to me. And it is the self-discovery, I think, that's part of the key.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think that you're right, that birth and death are always intertwined. You know, and in your case, truly, you know, it was like death was in the room at the same time that life was.
Yeah,
know,
yeah, it sure felt like that. Yeah, at one point anyway. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so then in a way, kind of like working through those things and coming to terms, you know, I think it affected me for a long time afterwards, actually, because, you know, like when they're little, you go through that experience and there's, and then life begins. And so you don't really have that time to sort of take a spa break and reflect on your experience, you know. It's no, like you're fully propelled into, you know, what it means to be a mother and, you know, long sleepless nights and, you know, all the work that it takes. And so you don't really have a chance to integrate that event, that major life-changing event. And I think maybe now I'm finally getting the chance to really think about it more, you know. But like I remember like the first year when Max was a baby, I hardly slept. Like I never slept deeply, and you know, because I was so afraid of SIDS, I was like so traumatized by him almost dying at birth that I couldn't relax, you know. I was just constantly on the defensive, you know, like just it was kind of crazy, you know. But I did have, you know, a friend whose kid had some health issues, and she had him about 6 months after me, and she also went through the same thing. Like she didn't have any sleep, and you know, and it was like this ongoing kind of trauma thing that was going on, you know. And I think that even though like there was tons of happiness in there, you know, but there was, it was also a really stressful time, you know. And only now that Max has grown up, I kind of feel like this year for the first time, I kind of feel like I can sort of let go, you know. It's like he's grown. I'm not, this sounds weird, I'm not legally responsible for him anymore. And that sounds strange because as a mom, I'm always going to feel responsible and I'm always going to be connected. And I still worry about him and I always will. But there's something about him being an adult. Like I don't have to worry if he misses curfew that the police are going to show up by my house, you know, things like that. I feel like because he's legally his own person now, I feel like it's a cue for me to do the right thing and kind of let go more and have more maybe the kind of relationship with him that his dad does, which has always been like, hey, buddy, what's up, you know, and lets him do like super permissive, you know, and it's like, oh, it must be so nice, you know. I feel like for the first time that maybe I can do that a little bit more, and kind of it helps sort of let go of, you know, all the weight of the responsibility that as a mother that you kind of feel on you, you know.
When I remember, you know, being pregnant and just, and I read everything about that could go wrong and
right
could yeah. go wrong after he was born, and I just kept feeling like every fucking milestone was like this mountain I had to climb up and over
yeah.
over and over again and be like, you know, because he was really like to turn over, but he was like super fat, so I don't think he could like leverage his weight, you know.
He's, we were so obsessed cute. With it, like, right
when's he gonna turn over, when's yeah. he gonna turn over, he was late to talk, why isn't he talking, does uh-huh. he have
right
you know autism or whatever things, and right. maybe now I feel like I'm plagued by these, like, you know,
those rules. Yeah.
So, what, you know, yeah. it must be part of that, too, that, like, you've made uh-huh. it to adulthood. You're functioning.
Like, oh, my God. It's like we somehow made it, you know, even though all of my screw-ups and all of my, you know, we somehow, like, here you are standing in front of me, a fully grown adult, and I'm proud of, you know, I'm proud of who he's become. Like, you know, I've definitely have not been the perfect mother, and I don't know if a perfect mother exists, you know, because we're so flawed as human beings. And but you know, you do, like, you read all the children's books and you know, with conflicting viewpoints. And so finally, I think at one point when Max was like, I think after the what to expect when you're expecting after the first year, and then I kind of looked at the second and third year one, and finally I just threw it in the trash because I thought, no, you know, I have an instinct and I've got to go with what my gut tells me. Otherwise, I can't ever say that I went with what I thought was right. And so I'm going to make a lot of mistakes, but those will be my mistakes. Not because I listened to some stupid book that told me what to do, you know. And, you know, I think he turned out all right at the end of the day, just despite me, you know. So, but I know what you mean with those milestones. You know, I think my mom was worried about me because I didn't talk until I was two. And, you know, here I am, like, gabbing away like there's no tomorrow, you know. It's not necessarily an indicator of the kind of person that you're going to be once you're grown. And I think my niece also didn't talk till she was about two, maybe even two and a half. They were really worried. And she is bright. She's creative. She has great empathy. And she is going to study. You know, she's got great grades. She's going to study at university here next year. And she's an actress. Like, she's going to be an actress and stuff.
They're learning more and more that kids process information differently. So it's like, you know, a lot of times there's people who are kids that, when they're learning to speak, they're practicing speaking. But then there's other kids that are learning by just absorbing for long periods of time. And then they finally let you know what they've learned.
Yeah.
But, you know, we just don't accommodate difference very well when it comes to developing and different stages and so. So when you think of, like, creating imagery related to your story, what are your thoughts? Or have you said anything today that is kind of, like, cued you into it?
Well, without giving to, you know.
And it won't be on record. It won't be on.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, a lot of times when I start a painting, I have something in mind, and it changes as I'm working on it, and sometimes quite drastically. You know, I think for me, when I, like, think about the whole process visually, it kind of feels like a tangled, bloody mess on one side and this sort of clinical aspect on this other side. And it's kind of a division, like, so visually I kind of see a line between that, maybe even two panels or, you know, some, which I tend to be fond of, you know. I think you saw when I did stuff before with the independent study, I like putting things together somehow, you know, like little portions of paintings. And sometimes I find myself cutting up old stuff and kind of, you know, this is an interesting area or whatnot. So I kind of see these sort of two opposites in there. And, you know, I kind of, you know, I come from more of a figurative background, but I've been moving a little bit more into abstraction lately. So I kind of, you know, I want to sort of see what happens with that. And so I'm going to, you know, start playing around with some stuff here pretty soon. And I've got, you know, like a starting point in mind of, you know, maybe blood and guts and, you know, veins and,
sure,
you know, and we'll kind of see. It might still totally change as I'm working on it, because that's kind of like, I'm working on this other painting right now that, you know, I've kind of started with one idea, and as I was working on it and I'm, like, processing information, that's things I feel strongly about that are happening right now on the planet and everything, like, I just had this idea, well, I'm going to make this totally different. I'm going to add this, and it's going to be this whole other thing. And that's just how my process has always been. So it sometimes takes me a really long time, because I've never been like, okay, I've got this idea, this is my sketch,
right,
and these are my photo references, and I paint this. Like, somehow that's not, it's always been kind of about the process, you know?
There were some things that you said that I thought were really visual, like when you did the connection between you and him and that bond. And then, of course, this play between opposites, like life and death, and this kind of the messy reality of it.
Yeah.
Like rawness.
Right.
And then, like, that pristine clinical surgical quality to it.
Yeah.
That space, too.
Yeah.
But there was a point there where you talked about the relationship between you and him when he was looking at you with those black eyes. That I thought there's something there too, visual.
Yeah.
You know, even though it is maybe quasi figurative, but
right.
You know. Maybe we're integrating some of whatever that is visually into the abstraction. But that was really poignant. That thing where you said he wasn't quite there. You know.
Right.
Like that distance.
Yeah.
Because it seems like Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, it also, it sounded like you were about to say it, but then you didn't quite say it, but it was like he was in some other, like, he was in the greater universe, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he was still in this, so I like
yeah,
that.
Like, as if he was still in the stars, and he hadn't arrived yet.
And that was, like, the visual that I was seeing, like, in his eyes, just, like, the expansiveness of the entire universe sort of thing, you know?
And, yeah, that was really... I guess that was really poignant for me. And I remember actually when I was a teenager, I took LSD a couple times and had a really bad trip one time. And the trip was basically that I was like a black hole in the universe and I couldn't get out of this thing. But it was like this image of me just being star stuff or whatever, you know, like that. We are made of star stuff. It's not Richard Dawkins. It's... that other guy that writes all the books about science, and it's not Richard. No, is it Richard Dawkins?
He's just a physicist?
Yeah.
Oh,
maybe it is Richard Dawkins. I forget. Max gave me the book, and but he has had a quote, and you guys maybe have seen it on like Pinterest or on T-shirts lately, because it's like, we are made of star stuff. And I've always, you know, it's funny because I actually, like, a while back thought of doing a whole series of paintings of, you know, either like people floating in the universe on chairs, or like where you have like the outline of figures, but then instead of actually there being flesh, it just be stars like the universe. And then recently there, of course, have been people, like it always happens with ideas, if you don't do it early enough, other people do it eventually because those ideas sort of...
collective ideas.
Yeah, it's that collective unconscious or whatever. People have similar ideas, and some friends of mine actually did paintings like that, and I was like, dang it, there goes my idea again. But you know,
well, it's just some potential there.
I think so too,
particularly with those, just that the black eyes, because there is something unusual about, I mean, or it's not unusual, it's very usual because they have every child, but their eye color doesn't come in for like almost a year. It's like a long time.
Yeah.
And it's at least 6 months. So for the first 6 months, every kid has the same color eyes.
Yeah.
And that is really odd to me.
It is weird.
It's almost like they haven't quite developed as a person yet. Although I really feel like August is who he is in my belly. But I still think it's almost like something that's so individualized hasn't been individualized yet.
Right. Like that personal stamp hasn't... Yeah, and it was weird because Max actually, until, you know, I don't know if, you know, you guys believe in, like, past lives, and I'm kind of, like, on the fence about all that myself because I'm like, anything's possible, you know, in life. But he used to have, like, these really intense dreams all the way up until he was, like, about 3 years old of, like, him being, like, covered in bullet holes and, like, me riding in a Jeep with him, like, and taking care of him. He was, like, mortally wounded, and that was before he ever even saw, like, army or war films or anything, because he was so little. And so I was like, what is this all about? Does this mean anything more? I don't know. There's
so
just a lot of,
like,
mysteries.
Three and telling you that stuff?
Yeah. I remember, like, I woke up in the middle of the night one night, like, he was like, he woke me up, he was like, mom, and I just saw him sort of like almost sleepwalking to this mirror that we had in the bedroom. And he was just, like, toddling over there, and he was, like, standing in front of the thing. I think he was, like, 3 and a half, and he was, like, looking at himself in the mirror and was, like, going like this. And he said, this isn't me. Where are the holes? And then the following night, and I was like, Max, it's okay, and woke him up and kind of soothed him back to sleep. And the next night... he was screaming in his sleep and so, like, or crying in his sleep or something. And I woke him up and I was like, what's going on? And he was like, we were in a car and there was blood everywhere and you were taking care of me. And, well, he said Jeep. So he must have seen a Jeep before by that time. I don't know. He said Jeep. So I was like, his doctor or his nurse or something, and I was like saving his life. Like, I don't know, it was weird. Maybe he did see something and that I'm not aware of. Maybe he saw MASH at his like great grandparents' house or something, you know. I don't know, might not be mysterious, universal, but But it does kind of, you know, when they are born and they have that look, it does kind of make you feel like there's something bigger than just this. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we've been separating things into themes, and I think yours is very much connection. That's what I was thinking. Because you were talking
about, you
used the word like three times.
And oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah.
Bond and... but we also talk about celestial bodies, but I think connection is good. Yeah. But anyway.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So yeah, maybe one of those two. Either of those two.
Yeah. Really.
We'll see what the artwork looks like, and then maybe that can help design.
Okay. Yeah. I can't wait to see everybody's stuff. Yeah.
We were just going through it today. I think we're going to... I'm going to go ahead and turn this off.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything else that you want to say about the experience or to summarize? Because people say all the most interesting things as soon as that gets turned on.
Oh.
I don't know. She said something
pretty
interesting.
I know. I think so.
Nice.
I think so too.
I think overall, I think even though, maybe just to summarize, even though it was an intense and traumatic experience, and I probably won't, you know, at this point in my life, I probably won't ever have this experience again. It was the most amazing thing ever, and I don't regret it, you know, for one minute. And it was a positive thing, you know. I don't know how interesting that was, but, you know, I think to summarize, because I, you know, I went kind of, you know, we were talking about the trauma of the whole thing, and it's like, it's easy for the mind to get stuck on the trauma, but, you know, trauma can also get you really good things, and so even though it's intense, it's like not a bad thing, I don't think, you know? I think it's just like, as a society, we're just not comfortable with things that are out of control and raw, and, you know, we're not like the Amazon tribes that just go squat in the forest and have our children. Maybe, you know, if it wasn't so dangerous just to have your baby alone out there by yourself, like, I kind of, it feels like a more sort of a natural, in touch way to have your kid, you know. I don't know.
No.
But yeah, anyway, yeah, I think that's it. I think, you know, it was good.
That's exactly how we'll end it.